And this is KDNK Carbondale. It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Thursday, March 2nd, 2017. I'm Steve Cole. Montana Congressman Ryan Zinke stepped into the role of Secretary of the Interior Wednesday. Zinke has had mixed reviews from conservationists across the West, including Wilderness Workshop's Conservation Director, Will Rausch.
He's probably about as good as we could get out of the Trump administration, but in a relative sense, he's pretty bad. The biggest reason that he's better than a number of other folks who might have been nominated is that he supports keeping public lands public instead of either transferring them to the states or selling them outright to the highest bidder. He's also been good on a program called the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which directs money from oil and gas lease sales and royalties to buy conservation lands and really, you know, lands that benefit the public, really everything from baseball diamonds and swimming pools to inholdings in national forests. And he's consistently asked for that program to be fully funded. So those are two really important things for him to be good on. But on most else, he's probably a problematic person to have running the federal agency that manages the most amount of public lands.
What makes you say that?
His relationship with the oil and gas and coal industries, they've donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to his reelection campaigns, and he supports increased energy development on public lands, despite the fact that there's literally millions of acres of already leased lands that haven't been developed. So there's plenty of minerals that gas companies can develop without new leases, but Zinke is likely to increase the number of new leases, and unfortunately probably in sensitive places like the Thompson Divide that, you know, we and other groups have fought for years because it's just not appropriate there. So we'd be worried about him leasing and thereby enabling development in sensitive areas. We're also concerned he's said that climate change is real, but unfortunately he's been pretty wishy-washy on whether it's caused by human industry. So I think to quote him directly, he's called climate change not a hoax, but not proven science either. And, you know, if we're going to get serious on climate, the first step is recognizing that 97% of all scientists in the world recognize it's happening, it's caused by humans, and therefore we can do something to stop it.
Right.
We're also concerned about his past positions on things like the Endangered Species Act, on increasing logging, irresponsible recreation on public lands, on mining, on drilling in places that are important to, you know, all Americans, like the Arctic Ocean or the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, supporting projects like the Keystone Pipeline.
Will Rausch of the Wilderness Workshop, thanks very much.
Thanks, Amy.
Last year, Congressman Scott Tipton helped push two bipartisan bills into law, the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act, or CARA, and the 21st Century Cures Act. Both address opioid abuse and addiction. For KDNK's monthly conversation with the Congressman, Amy Haddon Marsh talked to him about the opioid addiction problem and more.
Opioid abuse and addiction is a huge problem, especially in rural areas of Colorado. And last December, you were one of those who voted in favor of the 21st Century Cures Act, which provides $500 million a year to help states prevent opioid abuse and to get better treatment for addicts. Can you talk about that act?
You bet. We had a variety of pieces of legislation, actually, that we'd put together to be able to get real response mechanisms back to our states, back to our communities. We'd had the CARA Act as an example, which was the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act the president did sign into law in July, I think it was, of this last year. And that was to be able to address a comprehensive effort to undertake and address opioid epidemic that's impacting not only the 3rd Congressional District, but our state and our country. And to be able to get resources back into our local communities for treatment, recovery, law enforcement, the justice system for overdose treatment, some of the reversal on that, and did have some of the benefits, actually, in terms of being able to prioritize some of those dollars for our rural areas with the federal grants that were to be awarded to where we have a real challenge. Found it was interesting, Amy, when I met with the DEA several months ago. They said the two hot spots in the country for opioid and heroin abuse were in our district, in Pueblo and in Delta, Colorado. And so it shows that this is getting slightly larger communities and small communities alike. Going through some of our tours, our roundtables that we'd had, had the opportunity to be able to visit with people that were directly impacted through family members, women who had had children that were going through withdrawal after birth from opioid abuse as well. So the ideas of the legislation was to be able to get those resources back to our local communities and to be able to address the challenge that we have in common, unfortunately, now across the country in terms of opioid and heroin abuse.
You know, rural areas in western Colorado have a tough time with treatment, mainly because there isn't much. Urban areas have more mental health resources, as you know, and treatment facilities, needle exchanges, etc. In Garfield County, the Glenwood Springs Detox Facility closed down years ago, and local government, hospitals, and law enforcement have been hard-pressed to come up with funds or a building to reopen a new one. Too many addicts and drug and alcohol abusers end up in jail or make the rounds in drug court. How does the 21st Century Cures Act or the CARA Act address treatment for rural Coloradans addicted to heroin or other opioids?
We have a variety of grants that are going to be available, and it is going to be tailored for our rural communities, and competitive grants as well that are going to be available for communities that are able to put together programs for treatment. Just what you're describing would sound like it would fit some of those competitive needs to where a community has identified the problem, has an actual program that they'd like to be able to put in place, and would have access to those grants. And Amy, I'd had an opportunity to go to a needle exchange program over in Pueblo, and saw some of the real devastation that was in that community, addicts that were looking for a way to be able to get treatment and to be able to get their lives back on track. And so I think through these resources and to be able to get it to the local level, and that was actually part of the roundtables that we held around our district, to be able to bring together the healthcare providers, mental health folks as well, treatment facilities, law enforcement, to all be able to come together, be able to be solutions-oriented. We obviously recognize in our rural areas we don't have additional resources to be able to put in, and that was the idea of the legislation that we passed out of the House and the President signed into law.
So what I'm understanding, Congressman Tipton, is, for example, the situation with the Glenwood Springs detox facility and the need for that detox facility, that would be a candidate for one of these grants.
Right.
When are these grants available, and how do people go about applying for them?
Some have already been issued, and we'll certainly be reaching out, and I'll make sure our staff reaches out into the Glenwood area as well. After this call, some of the resources are available now through the program that's going to be there. It's the CARA that was reauthorized, the Residential Treatment Program, that deals with the prenatal and postpartum women. Those dollars are going to be available as well in our service areas. We'll be doing our outreach, and our communities are more than welcome to contact our office as well.
Talk about what first got you interested in this particular issue.
Well, when we started this process, Amy, it started out just with the awareness that the epidemic was arising throughout our district. Then had the opportunity in a variety of our communities to be able to go into facilities and to be able to talk directly to people through our roundtables. We had people come forward, incredibly touching to me, had toured the jail down in Alamosa. And when I went in into the women's unit, which was completely full, by the way, you had a number of women that were pregnant and dealing with actual drug withdrawal while they were incarcerated, hearing some of their stories and then understanding the impacts that that's going to have on an unborn child once they're born, going immediately through the withdrawal process is obviously devastating for the child, for the mother, and for all people of compassion to see that happen.
Shifting gears a little bit, the Bipartisan Cannabis Caucus was formed in December, which includes Colorado Democrat Jared Polis and Republican Dana Rohrabacher of California. This caucus wants to maintain the momentum of marijuana legalization. You've not been a part of that. Can you talk about why?
Well, I wasn't aware of it.
Oh, really?
They have hundreds of caucuses that are here. I'm surprised Jared Polis didn't talk to us about it. You know, we obviously have had the approval of recreational marijuana, medicinal marijuana, in our state. And happy to talk to Jared on it and see what the plans of the caucus are.
Well, now Jeff Sessions, the new attorney general, is expected to be tougher on recreational marijuana sales. Colorado, as you know, saw over $1 billion in legal cannabis sales last year in 2016, which brought in over $150 million in sales tax revenue. How will you support the legal marijuana industry in Colorado and states' rights if Attorney General Jeff Sessions decides to enforce federal law prohibiting the sale of recreational marijuana?
I think actually we had some commentary that was coming out of the Attorney General's office that they have not made a decision. I think that it becomes far more complex, actually, for the Attorney General's office. We saw legalization in additional states on the ballot this coming year, and our state voted and made their choice, and I think that we'd certainly see the Attorney General probably out of our state perhaps addressing any action that might come out potentially out of the AG's office, but we're probably being a little preemptive right now until we have real clarity out of Sessions' office exactly what they want to do. But we're certainly going to support our state. I've worked and had conversations with fellow Coloradoan Ed Perlmutter in regards to the banking issues, which are complex as well, to try and look at financial remedies for the legalized marijuana industry in our state and now for other states as well.
Well, Congressman Scott Tipton of the 3rd Congressional District here in Colorado, thanks very much for taking the time to talk with me and answer some questions this morning. We really appreciate it.
Amy, really a pleasure to be with you and look forward to seeing you soon.
Congressman Scott Tipton represents Colorado's 3rd District, which includes Garfield, Pitkin, Rio Blanco, and Mesa counties, and talks to KDNK the first of every month. Basalt Town Council voted Tuesday 6-1 to approve new digs for the Roaring Fork Conservancy. The Rivers Center project is a $3.3 million, 4,200-square-foot building near Rocky Mountain Institute's Innovation Center on Two Rivers Road. Groundbreaking is expected this spring or summer. And Sandhill Cranes are arriving in the Yampa Valley as part of their annual spring migration. These cranes winter in west central Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and northern Mexico. The Colorado Crane Conservation Coalition says cranes are the oldest living species of bird with fossil evidence dating back 10 million years.